The second part of our meeting of the Judicial Council, this is our business meeting, August 31st. The meeting is now officially in session. In addition to the council members, I understand, again, in our boardroom, we have Mr. Mark Robinson joining us by teleconference.
Good morning.
Good morning. I always remind council regarding our audio cast and video cast that please speak into your microphone, speak clearly, so those who follow us online or on video are able to understand the conversation and know who's speaking. Thank you. We begin this part of our agenda with the consent agenda, items A through H, and having heard no request to remove any of the consent agenda items, we approve these proposals and recommendations. By way of information, as you know, the ENP, the Executive and Planning Committee, places items on the consent agenda in consideration of the time we have for Judicial Council meetings, but placement on the consent agenda in no way reflects the significance of the proposal, and prior to any meeting, any member may request that the item be removed from the consent agenda to the discussion agenda. Item number one on our 8:30 agenda is council member liaisons to trial courts and AOC divisions. This is member reports and discussion. No action is required. I'll have Justice Miller lead off.
I'm going to defer to whoever would like to speak.
Judge Baker.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Morning, everyone. I'll provide a brief report concerning the liaison activities between myself and Angela Davis. We're both the liaisons to OGA, the Office of Governmental Affairs. We meet with Kurt Childs and his staff on a monthly basis. To date, those conferences have been over the telephone, and then we've had one in-person conference before one of our council meetings here. We have not visited the site, but we have a plan to do that, and I anticipate we're also going to make our conferences quarterly instead of monthly. Kurt Child appears here frequently, as you all know, and I think the responsibilities of OGA are well known to all of us, but so I'll try to be brief, but I just want to briefly give an overview of what their responsibilities are, what their staff amounts to, and what they've done with the budget restraints that we're all facing right now. First of all, on behalf of the branch, OGA essentially represents the Judicial Council and advocates for the Judicial Council on legislative, policy, and budget matters. In doing that, they review and analyze all bills as they're introduced and also when they're amended to determine what the impact is on the judicial branch. And as I think we heard Kurt mention yesterday, on an annual basis, that amounts to something in the neighborhood of about 1,000 bills. Very busy office. They identify and track legislative mandates, such as required reporting and rules of court. They develop legislation for sponsorship, and then they advocate that legislation. They participate in legislative hearings. They meet with legislators, staff, interested parties, and committees, and they're especially involved in the drafting of the budget trailer bill legislation insofar as how it affects the branch. They serve as staff to PCLC, which, of course, is chaired by Justice Baxter. They work with the council's advisory committees to develop recommendations for PCLC consideration, and they're also the staff for the Bench Bar Coalition. So they coordinate all the Bench Bar leaders to advocate legislation that's important to the branch. They put together the Bench Bar days in Sacramento. They set up meetings between members of the bench and bar, again, for purposes of advocating legislation that's important to the branch. They coordinate the logistics of the chief's State of the Judiciary address, the forum that follows that, and they arrange and coordinate liaison activities between the chief and justice system partners such as bar associations and other justice system players. They currently have 11 staff members. That includes Kurt Child and Donna Hershkowitz. They currently have one vacant position that needs to be filled, and they recently merged two positions into one due to budget constraints. And speaking of the budget, they've certainly done their efforts or their share to reduce their budget needs. They've in February, they moved into a smaller space in their building in Sacramento, cutting their rent by about a third. They've saved a considerable amount on office expenses this year, and Kurt gave me a report indicating that he thinks in the last year, you know, with these efforts, they've underspent their budget by roughly $150,000. So my final thoughts about OGA are as follows. As I said, OGA is well known to all of us. They report here frequently. They have an intimate relationship with the administrative director, and they're very hardworking, dedicated people. As we heard some yesterday, and as I think we all know, they're not hardworking, but they're fast working. They have to be. They work on nights and weekends. I remember when I was active with the Bench Bar Coalition, and I believe Marianne O'Malley is the co-chair of that coalition now, getting a call from Marianne on one day prior to one of our furlough days. And I can't even remember what the issue was, but you know, we amassed about 20 judges and ended up in Sacramento the next day, and Kurt and his staff were instrumental in putting that together. And that's typical of that office. So I guess my final thought about OGA is, you know, the theme that they seem to follow is with respect to legislation, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So their involvement in Sacramento is very important now. Those are all my comments about the legislative, you know, liaison activity that we're doing with OGA. And Angela, do you have anything to add to that?
The only thing that I would add is that in addition to serving as a liaison along with Judge Baker to OGA, I also have served on PCLC, and I completely agree with all the comments about how hardworking they have been and how proactive they've been. And many times when we've had conference calls and they've brought up legislation, they've anticipated the questions that we would ask on the committee, and they've really looked closely at the bills that are coming through, and even stuff that's not yet down on paper but just percolating. So I don't think they took too many dings actually in the SEC report, and I think they run a tight ship and work hard.
Thank you. Justice Baxter.
Yes, I'd like to just augment the comments. I've had the privilege to work with OGA since directly since 1996, and it's an extremely important operation, and it's an operation that by necessity requires that they obtain input from a variety of sources in addition to the advisory committees that might be at issue. We've certainly encouraged the input from the presiding judges, and I must say that Judge Rosenberg's been very helpful in that respect. I think the important thing is when the presentation is made to the policy committee, it will set forth the different views, including their own views. And sometimes their own views may differ from those of the advisory committee or particular. I mean, these are contentious issues that are coming before us. The important thing is that those contentious issues be aired to the policy committee, so we have a policy of encouraging any dissenting view to be argued and presented, and they're in the spotlight. And unfortunately, there will be criticism expressed against a particular employee simply because the person criticizing may have a different political view or may not appreciate the political consequences. There are situations, as Judge Baker made reference to, where you have a choice. You could just simply say, no, absolutely not. Or you could say, maybe, but let us be at the table to express our concerns and hopefully end up with something that's acceptable. So anyway, I do want to compliment Kurt and his team at OGA and to emphasize how important it is not only that the work they do, but also that we receive the that they receive the input from the members of the council. And if any of you have any questions, feel free to direct them to me or to Kurt. So, that's it.
Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. I want to report very briefly on my visit to two of the courts with which I am liaison. Earlier this spring, I was able to visit the Superior Court in Stanislaus County, Presiding Judge Cordova and Court Executive Officer Mike Tazzi. Mr. Tazzi gave me a very thorough understanding of the situation their court had. Their court has been one of those that I think in large part through his long experience and his skills had been able to put aside rather significant reserves in anticipation of the rainy day that we are all experiencing now. At the time also, we had, he was telling me that they had their new courthouse project that then looked like it was going forward and for which they badly need the space. I was able to have a brown bag lunch with a number of the Superior Court judges, and it was very informative, and I enjoyed hearing their thoughts and telling them that if there was anything that we could do to let us know. They have a very serious problem there in their juvenile delinquency court courtrooms. They are exceptionally small. The one row of seats for family and friends and spectators is about 2 feet behind the counsel table where the parties and the attorneys sit, and that table is about 3 feet from the judge's bench and the witness stand. There are two departments. They have a room between them that acts as a break room, a refrigerator room, and a toilet. And I was able, because of the security concerns, to get with Mr. Graham's office, and he responded immediately and was able to put together a plan to help alleviate in part the situation that they face in those courts. Unfortunately, money is the key, so when we're going to be able to do that and how extensively we're going to be able to do that is yet to be seen, but this is a matter in Stanislaus County that is not a matter of convenience or comfort. It's a matter of safety of the court users. I was also able to visit later in the spring San Joaquin County with Presiding Judge Warner and their CEO, Rosa Gincaro. And we know because of their submissions to the council just how difficult situation that they are in. At the point that I visited with them, I could not do a great deal more than talk to them and the incoming PJ about efforts that we could make. I think somewhat significantly during the course of that conversation, Judge Warner mentioned that they were having to close their small claims courts. And he said at the time that he made that announcement, his judges came to him and said, listen, instead of closing the small claims courts, I'll hear small claims. And as Judge Warner pointed out, the problem with that is they didn't need, they knew they could get judges to hear small claims. They didn't have the staff to transfer the files around the area so that small claims could be heard, even though there was a judge available to hear them. So they continue to be in very difficult straits. I also, along with Judge Diabo, we met, were liaison to our good people in finance. So we had breakfast meeting with Mr. Theodorovich, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so. And in the process of setting up another meeting and hopefully monthly meetings as time goes forward. I don't think that I need to explain to the council the very significant work that our finance people undertake. It's well known to all of us, but we're going to continue with that. And Judge Diablo may have some further comments on that meeting.
Thank you, Justice Hall. No, just briefly to say what an asset Slotko is and how lucky we are to have him and his experience here at the AOC and to the council.
Thank you. Judge Kaufman and then Commissioner Alexander.
Sue, you want to? Okay. Jody said yesterday, Jody and I and some of her staff and Kurt and Dave Rubin went up to Susanville And I was fortunate enough to give the chief's speech. She was unavailable to go up there. And we talked to the judges, who I've known for years, but basically is in terms of space, they really don't have much to argue about. I mean, they have a new courthouse. It's beautiful. OCCM has done a magnificent job. I know Judge Rubin and I were walking through the courthouses, and we're just, our jaws were dropping. This is the way we should be running our courts. It's just beautiful. It's safe, secure. They have all the modern technology in there. It's where we need to get to. And so I was very pleased. And also, Judge Bigger didn't tell you that he is the liaison to my court and I'm the liaison to his court, and we've decided that we would take care of those matters internally.
Stu?
I was a liaison to 5 courts. I was able to visit 3 of them, El Dorado, Amador, and Glenn. I met with the PJs and the CEOs of each of those courts, and instead of saying what each of them is doing, I figured I'd kind of combine issues that they all seem to have since they're all relatively small courts. El Dorado does have 8 judges with 1 commissioner, and they have an ADR person that acts as the judge pro tem. The other 2 courts are 2 judge courts with part-time commissioners. There are facilities issues in all of the courts. Amador does have a newer courthouse. They were sued in federal court.
Not on.
No, it's on.
No, I wasn't. Anyway, they were sued in federal court, and because of that, the county donated a building, and they built out a courthouse in a former county office building. It's not ideal. It still has some issues, but it's better than the historic courthouse they had before, which is now a museum. Both El Dorado and Glenn were anticipating getting a new courthouse. They both have historic courthouses, which have historic courthouse issues. They also have some other locations. El Dorado has 5 locations, 3 in Placerville, 1 in South Lake Tahoe, and 1 in Cameron Park. The South Lake Tahoe facility handles all case types, but the Placerville and Cameron Park have divided up what kinds of cases they hear in order to maximize staff, so people have to drive around to get to their certain case types. In Glenn County, they have their historic courthouse in Willows. They also have a small court, one-room courthouse in Orland, which also doubles as the emergency center for the county. So if there's an emergency, they close court because the building has to be used for emergency services. Some of the facilities issues we've heard before, inmates are taken through public areas in order to get to courtrooms. There's insufficient space for jurors. They have to do jury select. They have no jury assembly rooms, so they have to do jury selection in the courtrooms. And they do jury deliberations in the courtroom, so the staff leaves, the jury stays, and they can't do other things with those facilities while the juries are there. They also have some parking issues. Placerville, the closest parking lot, if you go to their downtown courthouse, is over a mile away, and you have to use a public bus to get back to the courthouse. They have insufficient space for clerk staff, but that right now is not as big an issue as it used to be because our clerk staff is down from 17% to 25%, depending on which courthouse you talk to. They've had some safety issues. They've had injuries to both jurors and customers. They have computer wiring problems. They have electrical wiring problems. They have the things we've heard about of mold, asbestos, cooling and heating. And Glenn County had a flood, which required their facilitator and self-help center to move to an area that is part of the walkway for the employees to go in and out of the building. I also talked to them about what services they use from the AOC. They're smaller counties, so they use more of the services of the AOC since they don't have some of the services themselves. The number one thing they think is helpful is the self-help centers, which have been very helpful in helping getting pleadings prepared and judgments and orders written. They consistently use the Office of General Counsel, which is another one that they say is extremely beneficial, as well as the maintenance program. They like the program called PRIDE. I don't know a lot about it, but they all seem to be very happy with it. They use HR services. They would like more IT assistance. They specifically would like things like e-filing and portals for the county agencies to be able to electronically transfer information. A big thing, since they're small counties, is getting the CHP citations into the system without having to do manual input. and they need case management systems that have imaging. They use the AOC to help with records management. They use the assigned judges program, though they have had the number of days available to them reduced because of budget issues. They're not sure a half day, which was one of the things that the SEC recommended would be as helpful because of the distance to get to their courts for the assigned judges, that it's better to have them do something for a full day. And they supported the idea of using assigned commissioners because of the fact that many of the subject areas that they need assigned judges in are in the areas that were commissioner expertise. They also like the regional meetings. They are in the north area. They're glad the Sacramento office is going to be kept open. They think it's very important for especially small counties to be able to get together and see people face to face. And they particularly would like roundtable discussions with other bench officers, not necessarily the organized things with, you know, the AOC staff providing information. What they've done regarding budget cuts was they've done some layoffs, mostly by attrition, and Amador is doing a voluntary separation plan, hopefully. They also anticipate that with the change in the pension reform, which probably will pass today, that several employees will retire between now and the end of the year because of the changes in their pension plans. They have reduced court hours. They still have furloughs from 12 to 22 days a year. They're replacing employees that leave with contract positions or per diem so that they don't have the salary issues. They've reduced a lot of services to their to the families in family court and juvenile court. They're using attorney pro tems, and they're lucky that they have counties nearby that will offer their judges to come. Amador and El Dorado are right near Alpine. Alpine's workload is a lot less, and one of the Alpine judges covers regularly in both Amador and El Dorado County to help out when they have vacancies. Glenn County is particularly having a trouble now because they have an issue with their DA that was similar to Riverside on a smaller scale, where they're charging things that are not being pled to. So instead of having 1 week a month of jury trials, they're doing jury trials every week now with their two-judge court. They've made cut in the past, and they feel that they were particularly heavy hit with this budget structure because of their reserves. They've reduced education and training. They want everybody to know that just because they're in a small county doesn't mean they don't have complicated cases. They just have less of them. The day I was there in Glenn County, Judge Byrd had 91 matters on his criminal law and motion calendar for the morning. They still have to know all areas of law and have to keep up on the law in all areas, and they're supposed to be training their staff, and they don't have backfill to cover people when they're gone to do that. They also said that it's hard for them with less staff to keep up with the record keeping that's required for audits. And they're having a hard time with new appointees having to go to NJO, Judges College, and the what I call the overview courses for subject matter. So they're gone 4 to 5 weeks out of the first year that they're there with very little ability to backfill those. El Dorado's anticipating two judges going up for election, so they'll have two judges in 1 year out of their 8 judges that will have to do all those educational things. One of the things they said was the biggest loss they had was to the fact they can't do anything creative, and they had to cut back programs that they thought helped their litigants, and this is at the same time that the county's cutting back programs because they're underfunding, so that a lot of their litigants are not getting services either from the court or the community anymore. They did have some suggestions of things that could be done. Judge Harlan helped prepare a program through the Central California Appellate Project that trains and supervises attorneys to do habeas corpus petitions, and she thinks that would be helpful to any of the counties that have prisons in them. Sacramento Court, and I think this was referred to yesterday, this is has a website that they've worked on that with the assistance of the AOC, where in a juvenile court case, if you have to transfer it to another county, you can go on this program. The other county has their calendars available. You can actually set the next court date, which you're required to do in juvenile, in the other county and transfer the file so that it saves time, and that could be expanded. There was also a recommendation that could be expanded to other case types as well, that they said that the increase in fees has not helped them that much because all it's done is increase their request for fee waivers, which adds more work to the clerk's office and adds more work to the court because they want hearings on their fee waivers because the fees have gone up. And that a lot of the fines in the criminal matters result in community service instead of paying of the fines. So that results in additional work for their staff as well without getting any additional funds. So they would request it before requests for just saying increased fees and fines as a way to fund the courts, that somebody look at the actual workload that that entails. Glenn County has set up a collection unit, which they recommend every county do. They say it has saved them from having to lay people off because some of the work they were doing in traffic to collect fines and fees are now done by the collection unit, and the money they collect can help be used to pay those salaries. They want the AOC to reduce the number of surveys that are requested and avoid duplication of them. When I was there, Glenn County had 24 surveys pending that they were supposed to be responding to, and they believe some of those are duplicative. They'd like regionalization of interpreter services. The finance department, according to them, does not identify what checks they're being paid for, so it takes a long time for them to match up checks with invoices, so they'd like more information. They'd like the AOC to act as a clearinghouse, especially since there's not going to be CLEPS awards, so there's not a place to find out what best practices are. And El Dorado is setting up a walk-up window in their new traffic court, so people do not have to go through the system and through security, but they can walk up like an ATM, pay their fines, deal with their business, and move on. And if it's successful and they are able to build a new courthouse, then they will try to have that be in their new courthouse as well, so there's less people having to go through the security system. I was also the liaison to CFCC. I met with them twice, once by conference call and once in person. We've had reports in the past about what all the services are that the various agencies and divisions of the AOC do, so I'm not going to go through all that again, similar to what Judge Baker said. As an overview, they do numerous grants, and many of their positions are funded, or a significant amount are funded by grants, so very little trial court funding, comparatively, is used for their staffing. They advised a numerous number of advisory committees and task force, and are very involved in statutory changes, keeping up on those things. And they also, from yesterday, they're part of the staff for the tribal court, state court forum. They provide numerous services for the courts, and based on what we heard yesterday about the effect on the public of what the budget cuts have been, they're trying to provide technical services to the courts to help manage that so that there aren't as delays for domestic violence, child abuse, and those issues. And they try to coordinate services with CJUR to do additional trainings. They get grant money to do a mandatory 1058 conference for 1058 commissioners and staff. And they also try to do an annual Beyond the Bench conference, which includes all stakeholders, including court, but also the public, with regards to juvenile court issues. And later today, the Blue Ribbon Commission is going to be requesting authority to get grants to do a conference regarding truancy and school discipline, and that would also be managed through CFCC. So they try to do a lot of things that would benefit the courts and provide direct services to the courts in hopes of trying to alleviate some of the budgetary issues and provide best practices that would be more beneficial.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a comprehensive report. Any other reports? Oh, Judge Elias? Excuse me. Good morning. I'm the liaison to CJUR, actually along with Terry Freeman and Fritz Ulrich, both of whom have abandoned me, abandoned all of us. But we actually have met with CJUR. I correspond with them. They also did three video WebEx meetings with us showing different aspects of CJUR, and they also gave us a tour of what they actually manage here. On a personal level, I've been involved with CJUR since it was in Emeryville. I think that's the first class I ever taught was when we were all over there, so that's a lot of years. I thought I knew everything about CJUR, having spent a lot of time with them, but I didn't realize all the functions that they do.
First of all, besides educating judges, they also run a significant program educating staff. A lot of this is mandated by the legislature, and they have a big education program there. In addition, they run the video room downstairs where the chief broadcasts from and all that. That facility is under seizure. The event planning, the getting all these hotels that we can't get, is run through seizure. And they also run the publication downstairs. There's a giant, if you've ever been there, there's a giant printing press and everything down there where they do in-house printing so that the costs do not have to be sent out. They also work with construction of the new courthouses, making sure the technology needs are there so that the long-distance learning in that can be offered, and so that the building doesn't get built and realize it's not wired for WebEx or wired for video conferencing or that, so they have a staff that's working on those projects as well. They are doing more distance learning, which is why more distance teaching. The realization is that the money is not there to bring everybody to gather together, and there are lots of programs that can be done for both staff and judges through distance learning. This is the WebExes and video conferences, and we get notices of those regularly that they are on. They're also working on modifying Saranus, which is a pet project of mine, I think, because I can never remember my password, so that it can get, it'll be a question if anybody here knows their password, so that they can get more of these things done, get them posted up there so that people who need education can go online and can actually watch the videos and can get the materials, as you're watching, read the materials and that, and they're working on updating that project. They do have less staff. People have had early retirement. They've also, the temporary people, the part-time people, are being reduced in numbers, which is obviously makes it more difficult to provide all of the services, but they're plowing ahead on it. I asked about now that there are less people, what are you going to do with all the space? And apparently the people from the floors that are being closed to be leased out, some of them are going to be moving in down with seizure. So there will be a consolidation of two different groups there to save space and enable those other floors to be rented. I guess that's really what it is. They are continuing on. They've done their next two-year education plan. It's been submitted to the governing committee of seizure. I assume it'll come to us. There's been no reduction in it so far in the education required or recommended for judges, and they intend to keep bringing it. There will be some live programs. The overviews and all of that will still be live, but some of the other forms will be long distance. One problem that Corrine Alvarado mentioned to me yesterday is the problem with the hotels in San Francisco, that they can't get any in the new George orientation, and some of the other programs are now scheduled in Sacramento. And while they get a better rate on the hotels in Sacramento, it means staff has to travel. And buildings have to be, facilities have to be rented as opposed to using the facilities that are here. It's sort of the yin-yang of the economic situation. So there may not be that much savings, but there's no ability to keep them in San Francisco because of the difficulty with the hotels. And other than that, they keep working.
Thank you, Judge Elias. Any more reports? Judge Baker.
Thank you, Chief. I just have a comment about the liaison program in general. I'm liaison to a number of the smaller courts in Northern California. And I just wanted to report that about how successful I think the program is. We, the EMP committee, agendized this report, I think mostly because we're close to the one-year anniversary of the liaison program. And obviously we can't have a report from all 58 courts this morning, but I just wanted to report that it's been very well received by the smaller counties. And I've received emails and phone calls and had some lunches with judges in the other courts where I'm liaison, and they all very much appreciate the fact that we have the program, and it really has been very successful, I think, with respect to our goal of transparency and accountability. So,
thank you. I think, speaking of education, as Judge Elias has, it points out how much we at Council are being educated by the liaison program of court's needs and court's workarounds and court innovation, as well as what really happens in the AOC in these agencies and these responsibilities. And I remember that this idea came about is because of Judicial Council itself brainstormed. I remember the whiteboard with Justice Miller and Marianne O'Malley, Judge O'Malley, writing down ideas, and this came to fruition. It also came at a time when we were discontinuing site visits, which were, because site visits took so much time, they were helpful, but here we get more information. It's interactive, and I have to say, when I go to courts to visit and speak with them, those of you who've been to your liaison courts already, the courts are so receptive to hearing and exchanging information because they've already met with you. This is a tremendous program. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.